I have to beg the forgiveness for a moment from the, I don't know if we have any teenagers, oh yeah, teenagers among us today, because I felt compelled this morning to share some research with all of you that explains a great many things for those of us closely related to the teens among us. You heard the story on NPR a couple weeks back, but it seems that teenage brains are different. It seems that scientists used to think in human brain development that the human brain was pretty much completely developed by about 10 years old. But it seems now that new research is uncovering that a crucial part of the brain, the frontal lobes, are not fully connected yet in teenagers. Really? It's that part of the brain that says, is this a good idea? What is the consequence of this action? It's not that they don't have frontal lobes. It's not that they can't use them. It's just that the connection's a little slow. Parents, does that explain it? Is this something we suspected pretty much all along? Something, one of those discoveries that we saying, oh yeah, thanks for letting us know. Now, teenagers, I'm not going to only pick on you this morning. Because, unfortunately, for those of us who are not, well, teenagers anymore, it seems that we have our issues, too. It seems, according to brain researchers, that as we age, our brains get slower. Now, there's a newsflash for you. It takes us longer to learn new information and longer to retrieve information that we've managed to store away. And the connections get slower and slower, and they seem to dry up. Alas, can anyone win? Either our frontal lobes are not fully connected, or by the time they do get connected, they aren't working so well anymore. You just can't win. I'm particularly worried because, you know, I know some of you, a lot of you tell me about your senior moments. But I've been having senior moments since I was about 20. So if it's downhill from here, I'm in trouble. But this morning here, we are here not to talk about brain research. We are here to meet the Spirit. But this research provides an apt metaphor for our spiritual brain function. For when it comes to the neural connections of the soul, so to speak, when you do the research, for many, if not most of us, it seems as if the connections are, well, disconnected. Many times the frontal lobes of our spirits just haven't been able to make the right connections with God's Spirit. We try, but we just can't make the leap, or the connections we do make seem to go awry or lead us in the wrong direction. They lead us astray, and we struggle. We wonder where God is. We wonder the great whys of life and are not satisfied with any of the answers that we encounter. We sense something, but the frontal lobes of our spirits and God's Spirit just haven't been able to make that connection yet. And sometimes we are able to make the connections with God's Spirit, but over time or because of particular circumstances, the connection seems to slow down. We age and we struggle to learn new information, and we struggle to learn and assimilate new circumstances and new ways of thinking and believing and living. And the old information that we have stored away is no longer easily retrieved. And we become disconnected. Even in the heydays phase of our spiritual lives, when we are operating at peak efficiency, when our lobes are fully developed and the neurons are firing at full speed, that's right when our lives, there is just so much going on, so many tasks and responsibilities, so many distractions, and the connections are there, and they're functioning, and they're available, but we are not. All the systems are online, but we are not there to use them. Truth is, at any point in our lives, younger or older, physically or spiritually, at any point we are liable to find ourselves disconnected from the very things that give us strength, that bring us wisdom, that provide for us peace. Now, some of us are managed to be happy and well connected, just in connection with the Spirit. Everything is right at hand. God bless you. But others of us are hungry. Others of us feel as if we're in that far off country, stuck in the mud, clinging to life, wondering what the heck happened. Fortunately, there is good news. We hear the story of the prodigal son, but really the story is not about the son or the sons. The parable that Jesus tells while the religious authorities scowl and complain in the corner is not about the sons. Yes, the younger son acts scandalously. What might seem natural in our culture, a son going off to discover his own way, was a scandal in the ancient world. You see, property was handed down from generation to generation, and it belonged not to the individual but to the family. So when that younger son took his own share and wasted it away, it was a scandal, it was a crime, it tore a hole in the family, not only in the fabric of that one family, but in the fabric of the community. It was an open wound of shame. But the parable, though it involves that younger son, is not about him. Yes, the older son is surly. Yes, this older son is judgmental and unforgiving and unloving. But the parable, the younger and older son, they are who we are. Either their frontal lobes have not connected yet like the younger son, or the connections have calcified to the point where they are dead like the older son. But the parable does not turn on them. It is not fundamentally about them. The real story is the father. You know, the father acts scandalously too. Acts foolishly. First, he lets his son go. Gives in to his wishes. He lets him tear apart the family. In the ancient world, when the patriarch, when the family, when something needed to be done, when a son got out of line, the patriarch said the word, and that son towed the line. That's the way it was supposed to work. But this father does not do that. He lets his son go. What a foolish and weak, weak father to let his son go like that. For the rest of the parable, he does nothing but act in the most undignified ways. He runs. When he sees a son, he runs. Aristotle said, "A great man never runs." An honorable man, a man of status, doesn't run. But when the father sees his son far off, he runs. In the most undignified way, robe flapping, ankles showing, arms chugging, he doesn't care about the way he looks. And he kisses and embraces the one who disgraced the family and the community. The one who should be kept out is welcomed back in. And not only that, but with a party. And then when the older son comes in and he begins to be surly and judgmental and he pouts outside the room, the patriarch is supposed to say, "Get in here, sit down, be quiet. If you ain't got nothing nice to say, just be quiet and party with the rest of us. Behave yourself." But not this foolish and weak father. He foolishly and weakly goes out and pleads with his son, "Please, please come in. Your brother was lost and now he's found. Can't you just come in? Have one drink, piece of cake." You see, the father in the parable is about only one thing: relationship. And that's where the story is. And this is what kills the Pharisees when they're complaining outside the door, when they're looking in at Jesus and seeing what Jesus is doing. It kills them that Jesus doesn't care what he looks like. He doesn't care about his status. He doesn't care about what he's teaching. He just cares about reaching out to sinners and eating with them. "Jesus, how can you do that? You should have kicked him out." See, their frontal lobes have dried up. The connections aren't there. They can't compute the mercy and love of God. But there is God, letting us go our own way, waiting and watching for us to come home. And when we appear as a dot on the horizon, don't you know it, there comes God a-running. It doesn't matter to him what he looks like. He's not thinking about his status. He's not concerned about the opinion of others or what the rules and expectations are about how he is supposed to behave. He wants to embrace us. He wants to party with us. That's what the cross is all about. Yes, it's a vulgar symbol, a symbol of disgrace and disgust that Jesus would end up on a cross. It's scandalous, foolish, how weak of him. But Jesus doesn't care if that's what it takes to connect with us. We may feel as if we are stuck in the mud for whatever reason. Sometimes it is because of our own brokenness and decisions we have made or the ways we have lived. And sometimes it is because of circumstances that the world and life visits upon us. And we are in the mud. We are hungry. But God is looking for us, waiting to rejoice. That's the message of the cross. That God will let nothing stand between us and him. One story I want to share with you. In the Second World War, a group of soldiers was fighting in the rural countryside of France. And during an intense battle, one of the American soldiers was killed, and his comrades did not want to leave his body on the battlefield, and they knew he had no family to go home to, and so they decided to give him a Christian burial. Remembered a church a few miles behind front lines whose grounds included a small cemetery with a nice, beautiful little white fence around it. And after receiving permission to take their friend's body to the cemetery, they set out for the church and they arrived just as the sun was setting. They knocked on the door of the church, and an old, old priest opens the door. And his face is deeply wrinkled, but his eyes are bright. "Our friend was killed in battle," they said, "and we want to give him a Christian burial. Is it all right if we bury him here in your cemetery?" Apparently the priest understood what they were asking, although he spoke very broken English, and he said, "I'm sorry, but we can only bury those who belong to the same faith as we have here." And weary after many months of war, the soldier simply turned and walked away, but the old priest called after them and said, "Wait a minute. If you want, you can bury him outside the fence." Cynical and exhausted, the soldiers dug a grave and buried their friend as the night grew darker and darker, just outside the white fence. And they finished, it was almost pitch black. The next morning, the entire unit was ordered to move on, and the group raced back to the little church for one final goodbye to their friend. And when they arrived, they couldn't find the gravesite. Tired and confused, they knocked on the door of the church, and they asked the old priest if he knew where they had buried their friend. "It was dark, and we were tired. We just can't find it. Can you show us where our friend has been buried?" And a smile crossed the old priest's face. He said, "Well, after you left last night, I could not sleep. So I went outside early this morning, and I moved the fence." We might feel as if we are outside the fence this morning. But the foolish father, the weak father, and the good news of the cross reminds us that God is always moving the fence for us. Come home. Wait for the embrace.